This is Baseball Tonight, the podcast.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Unfortunately, your flight to Bristol has been delayed once again. But for your entertainment purposes, please listen to the Baggage Claim Monday edition of the Baseball Tonight podcast with Buster Olney. The White Zone is for immediate...
This is the Baseball Tonight podcast for Monday, July 26, 2021. Producing from his home studio in the foothills of Connecticut is Taylor Schwenk. I'm Buster Olney. In my favorite Baggage Claim Monday spot, Taylor, between the concourses E and F at O'Hare Airport. I have this nice private little area here. It's perfect.
It's a beautiful sight, Buster. You know, sometimes you never know what's going to happen on a Baggage Claim Monday, or we had a Baggage Claim Wednesday. I believe that was 2 weeks ago, right. You know, right underneath an intercom, and we just got to get the podcast out. You know, we got to grind through it. So I'm glad we're in a little bit of a comfier spot today to get this done.
Exactly. We're taping this at about 5:30 in the morning Central Time. We'll be talking with Jessica Mendoza. She's going to be talking to us from Japan at the Olympics. And we'll be talking with Tim Kirkjian about the trade market, which is really beginning to percolate. This is definitely the time of the baseball season when teams are deciding whether or not to be buyers or sellers. The Yankees, right on the fence, and on Sunday, another crushing loss. Domingo Germán was outstanding for the Yankees on Sunday. He took a no-hitter into the eighth inning. This is what happened.
And there's a drive to right field. Well struck. Retreating is Greg Allen. He's at the warning track. And that ball is off the right field wall. Throw to second. Not in time. Verdugo just missed a home run. There goes the no-hitter. And that was a smash. Line drive.
That, of course, was Sean McDonough, WEI 93.7 FM. So you figure from the Yankees' perspective, they got a 4-0 lead at that point. The no-hitter's over. Aaron Boone was able to go to the bullpen at that point, and you assume you can hold a 4-0 lead. But remember, these are the 2021 Yankees who've blown these big leads repeatedly, these crushing losses. That's what happened. Hit after hit after hit by the Red Sox in rapid-fire fashion. The score was tied 4-all. Bottom of the eighth inning, this happened.
Britton's 1-0. Swing, pop, fly, right field near the line. Not particularly deep. TK's tagging. Allen the catch. Allen's throw to the plate. Not in time. Hernandez comes sliding in hand first ahead of the tag from Sanchez. And the Red Sox have turned the tables on the Yankees from four down to one ahead here in the eighth inning.
And that meant after the Red Sox won this game 5-4, the Yankees come into this last week before the trade deadline, 9 games out of first place, just 4 days before Friday's trade deadline, 4:00 Eastern. Aaron Boone, the Yankees manager, had to answer a question after the game about not having his infield in a key spot.
You know, that's the one where, you know, think about going all the way in there with no outs. I just didn't want to get beat on something soft with no outs. So had the middle back, you know, in hindsight, that's the one that you kind of question myself about, like, yeah, should we have just, you know, sold out with no outs there? You know, that's certainly debatable.
And he's having to answer a lot of questions these days, given the nature of some of these Yankees losses. Big deal on Sunday, the Padres acquired Pirates second baseman Adam Frazier for 3 prospects. He's not a free agent until after the 2022 season. Second baseman outfielder entered Sunday hitting .327, the second best average in Major League Baseball, with 4 homers and 32 RBI. The Pirates got the Padres' number 5 prospect overall, along with 2 other minor leaguers. Pittsburgh kicking in a lot of Frazier's salary for this year, about $1.6 million. Earlier in the weekend, the Mets completed the trade for left-hander Rich Hill. The Mets looking for help for their rotation with some of their guys being out. They also got good news over the weekend. Carlos Carrasco looked good in his appearance. The Nationals, like the Yankees, sort of on that tipping point of whether or not they're going to be buyers or sellers. And Max Scherzer was scratched from Saturday's start. There's been a lot of speculation about whether or not Scherzer would be put in the trade market if the Nationals decide to become sellers. Well, he had to be scratched from that start. And so it was kind of a giveaway when Nationals manager Dave Martinez said before the Orioles game that his MRI on his mild right triceps discomfort was, quote unquote, extremely clean. That to me, Taylor, when you come out and claim that he's extremely clean, I think maybe Dave Martinez is aware of the fact that they're talking about Max Scherzer in trade discussions.
I don't think I've ever heard an MRI described as extremely clean before. So, yes, I would agree with you.
I actually had some general managers give me an opinion on what Max Scherzer's status is right now. I'll talk about that when we have Tim Kirkjian coming up. The Nationals. What a brutal time for them to be in a losing streak, especially against Taylor's Orioles, who took it out on Washington. Give a listen.
1-2 pitch. Swing on a ground ball. Backhanded by Keeble. Coming to the plate. The throw. The tag. Safe. He's safe. And the Orioles have walked it off. Ryan McKenna scores.
That from 105.7, The Fan. The Orioles beat the Nationals 5-4. Again, four straight losses for the Nationals. They could also market the likes of Daniel Hudson, one of their relief pitchers. The Dodgers placed all-star outfielder Mookie Betts on the injured list. He's been dealing with some right hip inflammation. He hasn't played since July 19th. The Angels and the Twins, and the highlight for the Angels always seems to be Shohei Ohtani, who was again on Sunday.
Shohei swings and drives a ball deep into right field, and that one is out of here. It's been a while between home runs for Shohei. That is number 35 of the season, a major league high. And today in Minneapolis, Sunday is showtime. It's 3-2 Angels.
Gary Smith, Angels Radio, AM 830. Dodgers played the Rockies. They prevailed 3-2 with help from Will Smith.
Will Smith hits a high fly ball to slight left center field. It is carrying. It is gone. A home run. Will Smith puts the Dodgers in front 3-2.
Yeah, from AM 570 LA Sports, Tim Nebrin on that call. White Sox and the Brewers on Sunday Night Baseball. I was there in Milwaukee last night. A pitching matchup of two guys who could be Cy Young Award winners at the end of this year. Lance Lynn of the Chicago White Sox versus Brandon Woodruff against the Milwaukee Brewers. And the backdrop, a little bit personal between these two guys, because Lance Lynn went to Ole Miss. Woodruff went to Mississippi State. Lynn was dominant in the bottom of the first inning.
Next offering, cut on and miss, struck him out. Lance Lynn strikes out the side.
That was Boog Sciambi on ESPN Radio. Willie Adames struck out in that moment. I hope everybody got a chance to see Willie Adames mic'd up on Sunday. He was so fun. At one point, talking to his bat, referring to it as my love, begging it for hits because it had been a while since he gotten a last one. Lance Lynn got it done at the plate at the top of the second inning.
The 0-2 lined into right field. That's a base hit. In to score, Garcia. Zavala to the plate. He'll come in. How about that? Lance Lynn, a two-run single off of Brandon Woodruff into right field, and it's 3-0 White Sox.
Yes, the game was in Milwaukee, but boy, the White Sox fans traveled for this series. I was at the ballpark on Saturday as well. Great energy between the two fan bases in this series. The White Sox salvaged the final game 3-1. Brewers won games 1 and 2. The civil hearing for a temporary restraining order requested against Trevor Bauer was postponed to next month after Bauer's legal team requested more time to prepare a defense against witnesses and documents that it claimed to receive only recently. The judge set aside August 2nd, 3rd, and 19th for the hearing, which is expected to take between 2 and 3 days. Bauer's administrative leave expires on Tuesday, but Major League Baseball can extend it once again with consent by the Major League Baseball's Players Association. During this administrative leave, Bauer is paid, certainly at this point, with this case now backed up into mid-August. He's starting to bump up against the calendar as to whether or not he appears on a baseball field again in 2021.
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code BASEBALL. That's code BASEBALL. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish.
Yes. The clutch hits, the strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems, with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, 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 with nothing on your roof. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package.
Seam heads rejoice. This is Timmy time.
Baseball is the greatest game.
With Tim Kirkshen.
It never disappoints you.
On Baseball Tonight.
Tim Kirkshen covers baseball for ESPN. Tim, how you doing this morning?
I'm well, Buster. How are you?
I'm doing great. Only four and a half more days until the trade deadline. And we're going to get into a lot about that because there's a lot going on. There's stuff happening over the course of the weekend. But I want to start with this with you. On Friday, just after we got done taping the podcast, the Cleveland Indians announced their new team name. I should say the Cleveland baseball franchise announced its new team name for 2022 and beyond, the Guardians. I do not think it was a coincidence, Tim, that they dropped this on the same day that we had the Olympic opening ceremonies, that they dropped it on a Friday. I think the Indians were, going to let everybody know and be transparent about it. But I also don't think they minded that the whole thing flew under the radar, because no matter what they came up with, there were a lot of their fans who weren't going to be happy. What do you think of the name?
Look, I'm okay with the name. The Indians, I know how the Indians went about this. This was not an easy decision. I wasn't shocked that they came up with Guardians, because I knew on the inside to some degree that a bunch of names were not going to fly, including Spiders and some others. It's not easy picking a name, Buster, especially in this day and age. So, and I'm in the vast minority on this, but the name of a team, the uniform and all that, that stuff is not that important to me. I think just playing the game is the right thing. They still have a major league team in Cleveland, and it's a good one. And the Guardians is a perfectly fine name for me, because I know the Indians went through a million possibilities here. They looked at everything, and this is what they came up with. So I'm good with it.
So tell me about, you said you'd heard around the inside that, the Spiders was never going to be considered, some other. Tell us what you know about the process.
Well, I just know some of the people who work there, and they're Indians people. I mean, they're Cleveland baseball people forever. They care so much about that city and their fans and the town and everything. So they went through, Spiders and the Rock Hall and all those things and, the Naps and everything like that. And there just wasn't the perfect fit. So this seemed to be the perfect fit or the right fit at the time. And it's just a very tricky process picking a name for a team in this day and age.
I'm right there with you in terms of how I view names. Like, I'm not really that wed to the names. I just like the franchises and how they play and the people on the teams. I will say that when my son saw the name, he couldn't stand it. My focus group of one, the 17-year-old. Taylor, right. What do you think of the name?
I think it's fine. It's unoffensive. It's sort of bland enough. I think that's probably what they were going for. I think Spiders would have been better. And I think we need to let the Indians fans kind of grieve the loss of the Indians name. But if you're not an Indians fan, like, a lot of people complaining about the name, like, no one cares about your opinion. Stop whining. It's bland. It's whatever. Get over it.
You agree with me, Tim, that the timing of this announcement, they kind of wanted to be like, oh, yeah, by the way, our team name is Guardians moving forward.
Right. I think so. And I think it was smart to do it that way, because, again, people look, Buster, people aren't happy about anything anymore. Whatever you do or say, you offend somebody. So let's just move on from this. They're a baseball team in Cleveland. That's what they are. And good for them.
Yeah. Last week, Tim, we had a debate on the podcast about who the American League Manager of the Year might be, whether it's Alex Cora, potentially Tony La Russa, Dusty Baker, AJ Hinch, Kevin Cash. And we got a number of tweets, people complaining that we didn't include Gabe Kapler in that conversation. So you're right. People are not going to be happy with everything. So Adam Frazier gets traded to the Padres yesterday. Fascinating deal. I got a hint of that because I'd heard that the Padres actually, among the possibilities that they talked about was Trevor Story. And they had internal conversations about moving Trevor Story if they had finished the trade with the Rockies to play center field. I think that gives you an indication of how they were thinking. We're not going to worry if it's a perfect fit position-wise. We're not going to, you know, tell you that every piece is going to fit together like a puzzle, but we're just going to add really good players. I think it's a great addition and a guy who in October just going to have great at-bats. What'd you think?
Well, he's leading the major leagues in hits. That's who you acquired. More important, he's played 3,000 innings in his career at second base. He's played 1,000 innings in his career in the outfield. And that's what you're looking for is a versatile player that can play two different positions, if not more, and is going to get hits. Because in this day and age where we strike out all the time, you got a guy who puts the ball in play and hits it hard somewhere all the time. This is a classic AJ Preller move. He's going for everything as he should, given this team. It has not, Buster, been a particularly good offensive team most of this season. They need a leadoff guy. They need another guy to get on for Tatis and Machado and the rest. And Adam Frazier's the perfect pickup. There are varying reports whether they gave up too much or not enough, but they got an everyday player who can play second base every day, and they don't need him to because Jake Cronenworth is a good player. Or he can play the outfield. So go Padres. That was the right move for them.
Yeah, a lot of options for Jace Tingler in terms of how he's going to be making out his lineup. The Padres still in the market for a starting pitcher. We know that the Padres are buyers for sure. If you're Brian Cashman today, general manager of the Yankees, what are you doing? Because you just saw your team have its guts ripped out again. Tim, they've had more brutal losses this year than I think you typically see in a decade for a team in terms of being ahead by four runs and then somehow finding a way to lose like they did yesterday. What are you doing if you're the Yankees?
Well, first off, the three losses that they've had this year leading by four runs or more in the eighth or later, that's ties for the most by any team in the expansion era, I mean, in the wildcard era, 1994 on, and it ties for the most in any season in the history of the Yankees. That's how brutal it's been. So to answer your question, they have to still try to add because they're not out of that second wild card race. They still have a chance to beat out, you know, the A's or the Mariners or the Indians or the Blue Jays for the second wild card. So if you're the Yankees, you have to go for it. Would I go for it? Would I give up a top prospect now? No, I wouldn't do that. I would acknowledge maybe this is just not the year for the Yankees to make the playoffs. But they're going to go for it because they're the Yankees and they have to.
And I think the priority is going to be to get a legitimate center fielder, like a guy who can hit. They obviously are relying on Brett Gardner more than they ever planned in the aftermath of a Aaron Hicks injury. You know, Starling Marte is a perfect fit. I know that the Yankees and the Marlins are far apart, but, you know, that's a conversation that you would expect as we get closer to the trade deadline, given the fact that the Marlins know they're not going to win this year and Marte is going to be a free agent. You would accelerate that. Whether it's the Yankees or somebody else, the Marlins should make a deal with him. I'm really curious about the Nationals and Max Scherzer because the Nationals now have absolutely collapsed. How do you lose to the Orioles that many games, Tim? Okay. Well,
they just got swept by the Orioles over the weekend, and yesterday was one of those seminal losses where you say, okay, it's time to switch course here. Instead of adding, we're eight games under, we're eight games out in the division. It's time to try something else because it's not going to happen this year for the Nationals. So, I mean, you're going to need Max Scherzer's permission, 10-5 rights, in order to trade him, but I would trade Max Scherzer and then re-sign him as a free agent after the season. That's how important he is to that team. I would bring him back under all costs, but you trade him now, get as much as you can for him because this is just not happening this year for the Nationals. Buster, we know the reason they won a couple of years ago is that Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbin were great, especially in the postseason. Strasburg's hurt. Corbin has struggled. It's time to trade Max Scherzer, get pieces in return, let him go to free agency, and re-sign him.
I will tell you that the fact that he was scratched from Saturday's start If the executives that I spoke with over the weekend from other teams are right, that is going to wildly temper the willingness of other teams to give up major assets to get Max, because they feel like, look, you just can't spend big capital when there's an open question as to whether or not this guy's healthy. When you have a guy have a tricep injury, Pat, pop up, that's a big deal. And I don't know. Taylor and I, Tim, were talking about the wording from Dave Martinez, the Nationals manager, when he spoke with reporters. He said the MRI on the mild right triceps discomfort was, quote unquote, extremely clean. What do you think? That to me was a manager trying to prop up his pitcher's trade value.
Right. Well, Buster, again, this week before the trade deadline, we've been doing this for a long time. And, you know, the fortunes of a team changes with one victory. I've had GMs tell me if we win tonight, we're buyers. If we lose tonight, we're sellers. That's how precarious the situation is. And you're right. With an injured player, you got to be extra careful. General managers earn all their money right now. Are we in or are we out? Are we going to overpay to get somebody, or are we going to sit back? I mean, it's such a difficult and fascinating time of year.
Yeah, maybe the most coveted piece that the Nationals have would be Daniel Hudson, who, of course, threw the last pitch of the World Series back in 2019. And I said to someone that we're by the end of the week, relievers and contenders, it's going to be a lot like Oprah, where Oprah's like pointing at the crowd and you get one and you get one and you get one. All these contenders are going to add a reliever by the end of the week. Yes.
Yes. Relievers, as we know, bullpens are critical. Davey Johnson used to tell me all the time, you win in October with bench and bullpen. And that was 15 years ago. Now it's way more important, bench and bullpen. And relievers will be going all over the place. That's where the Cubs will probably be dealing from, with Craig Kimbrell and Andrew Chafin and Ryan Chapara. I mean, that's the real commodity, because they pitch every single day and nobody goes seven innings anymore.
Yeah. So let's talk about the buffet table. That is the Chicago Cubs. I'm just going to throw a bunch of names at you of guys and ask you where you think they're going to wind up. And I know, you know, making predictions in trade season can be a little sketchy, but it's also fun. It's a fun conversation I have with general managers every day these days. We'll start with this. We were talking about a reliever, Craig Kimbrell. What's your guess?
I'm with you on this, Buster. I could see him going to the Red Sox. And I noticed yesterday you mentioned the Dodgers, which both of them make an awful lot of sense. Look, Matt Barnes has been fantastic. But if you can have him fantastic in the eighth inning and Craig Kimbrell fantastic in the ninth, suddenly the Red Sox are a different look. And Kenley Jansen has struggled recently. Craig Kimbrell would be great there. So I'll say the Red Sox over the Dodgers. But I think he's, I don't want to say definitely about anything, I think he's the first or the biggest Cub to go right away.
Yeah, and I'm going to shift on that. When I've been talking about the Red Sox, I'm going to say he's going to wind up with the Dodgers. You know, based on some stuff I heard over the weekend, and knowing that Chaim Bloom, who's the head of baseball ops for the Red Sox, knowing there's so many relievers available, I don't think he's going to feel compelled to take the most expensive guy. But, you know, maybe it's a Daniel Hudson that he winds up adding. Maybe it is a Tapera. Maybe it is a Chafin. You're going to have other guys available. The reason why Kimbrell fits so well with the Dodgers, I mentioned this on Sunday Night Baseball, it really helps Dave Roberts with a political situation to go to Kenley Jansen when he's struggling. If you can tell him, look, you know, that the guy we're going to have who's going to come in and finish games on Sundays is one of the greatest relievers in the modern era. What do you think?
Yeah, well, there's no arguing, especially with the season that Craig Kimbrell is having. It's a joke. He's been the best relief pitcher in baseball this year. I'm not sure there's a big question about that. And he's pitched in the postseason. So anyone would want Craig Kimbrell at this time of year. And the Dodgers are determined to repeat. They're in a great division, and he would really help them.
Anthony Rizzo, I think he winds up with the Red Sox. What about you?
I think he stays with the Cubs. I don't think they can trade all those guys. I think they have four big ones. I think maybe two of them go. I think two of them stay. I think Rizzo stays, even though your Red Sox have to add someone who can play first base and hit left-handed. And Rizzo's the perfect choice, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Chris Bryant. I think in the end, he winds up with the Mets on a deal made just before the deadline. What's your guess?
Yeah, that's my guess too. The Mets need a third baseman. Chris Bryant's starting to swing it again. He's had a much better year than last year. He's played in the postseason. And the Mets, as we've talked about here, Buster, they're not about, with that owner, when all the expectations about to say, all right, we're good, we're going to win this division. That's not good enough when you're playing in the same league with the Brewers, Giants, Padres, and Dodgers. You have to get better going into October, assuming the Mets make it there, and Chris Bryant makes the Mets a much better team. They are a weak offensive team. Chris Bryant would make them better.
So some other stuff that I heard over the weekend, you know, and it's been relatively slow in the trade market in the last 10 days, but I've had executives say to me that they think as these teams declare buyers or seller that there's going to be a mass of deals at the end of this week. They're convinced of that because of, you know, teams like the Yankees and Nationals at some point have to decide exactly which way they're going to go. I hear that Marcus Semien might be out in the market, which would be really interesting. You know, we've talked about the potential of the Blue Jays. Generally speaking, it's been a year of progress, but he's on a one-year deal, Tim. That's someone who would interest a lot of teams, maybe even the Mets. About Trevor Story, you know, what I heard is that the Rockies front office had been working to convince ownership in Colorado, look, we need to trade Trevor Story to get value back. We can look back at the Nolan Arenado situation and see that the Rockies ownership did a terrible job handling that. Tim, they can't let Trevor Story just finish the year as a free agent and all you would get is a compensation draft pick. That's crazy. They should find a deal by the end of the week.
Yeah, and I don't care if he hasn't been the great player that he usually is this year. He's still he's a difference maker for any team, and I would play him at shortstop wherever he goes. I mean, just imagine the Yankees getting him. I'm not suggesting it's going to happen. You move Gleyber Torres to second, you move LeMahieu to first or to third or somewhere, and your infield is a whole different look. A lot of teams could use Trevor Story, and I think the Rockies have to trade him because they're not going to be able to re-sign him after the season. And I know draft picks are important today, Buster, but you got to get two or three young players for him and move on from there.
All right, Tim. Well, have fun this week, and I will see you trade deadline show on Friday from 2 to 4:30.
Okay. Take care, Buster. Thanks, and travel safely today.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you got to check out NexGard Plus, Afoxolaner, Moxidectin, and Pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurological disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.
Disco Mendoza joins us today from Japan, from the Olympics. This Olympic update is brought to you by CarMax. If it's time to sell your car, go for sold. With an instant offer from CarMax, find out what your car's worth with an instant offer at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way it should be. Jess, how you doing?
Oh my gosh, I can't even tell you how good. This is like the ultimate for me. Having played in the Olympics, this is the first time I'm covering a Summer Olympic Games, and covering the sport that hasn't been here in 13 years, softball and baseball. The last time they were in the Olympic Games, 2008. The last time I was on the field playing Olympics, 2008. So it's been pretty surreal, Buster. And we got a big game coming up. Tuesday night, my time, Tuesday morning, back in the U.S., USA versus Japan, gold medal softball game.
What's your feel on that game?
Well, so, I mean, Japan beat us for the gold medal game back in 2008. I'm not bitter still at all. To be honest, part of why I'm here is for this moment. I can't even begin to explain the fact that Yukiko Ueno will be pitching for Japan. She beat us in the gold medal game. Monica Abbott, Kat Osterman, both of my teammates then will be pitching in the game. They played each other today. It came down to a walk-off win from USA. They were getting no hit until the last inning, and then they came back and beat Japan by one run. I can't even be in it. Like, I know I keep saying that, but like, it is a rivalry in the sport that it's unmatched by anything you've ever seen. And we get it for everything on the line, the gold medal.
Well, am I wrong? And is my memory wrong that you, one of your famous moments was running over a catcher from Japan. Is that accurate?
It was a catcher from Greece in Greece. That was the Athens Olympics, but that one was rough because I took her out, and then, you know, it's a home country. So I had like death threats because I had totally pummeled this catcher. And then it was like, centerfold piece in the Sports Illustrated the next day. So it was like American, you know, taking out the Greek catcher.
What's the atmosphere there?
You know, it's weird. I'm not going to lie, because, you know, it's the Olympics. No fans are allowed. We're in this kind of soft quarantine. I've been out to surfing and skateboarding and kind of checking out some of the other events, but it's weird because it's just us. So, you know, USA wins it against Japan in a walk-off, and you could hear a pin drop. I know we've all gone through that in this last year with COVID, but it's just a weird feeling to go almost back in time. A lot of paranoia hear about COVID and, you know, obviously not wanting any of the athletes to get it. So just over the top security, which I totally understand, but I'll tell you what, they've been doing it because everyone's still been able to compete. The games have gone on, and it's been awesome to see.
Tell me about when you talk about security being over the top. Give me some examples of that.
I had one of my teammates come up behind me just to kind of scare me. And she didn't even like hug me or anything. She just kind of snuck up behind me as I was, of course, doing a hit. And there must have been 18 people that jumped out of nowhere with their security uniforms on to come and tell me and yell at me to not make the player come at me. I was like, I didn't even know what she was doing. They're like, no. So they were going crazy. We have security at the hotel. So to be able to leave, you're allowed 15 minutes to walk to a store, and then you have to come back any more than that. And you could be literally like arrested. So, I mean, it's pretty strict.
Tell me about the baseball. Where does that stand?
So USA opens up on Friday. I've got that game. Actually, I'll be calling it my first Olympic baseball game. So I'm pretty pumped about that. They're playing Israel. Ian Kinsler, a name that many know, is actually playing for Team Israel. Todd Frazier will be on. He's highlighting a Team USA team. I'm actually going out to their practice here in a couple days, but there's a lot of excitement around the fact that baseball has returned to the Olympic Games as well, especially when you look at teams like the Dominican Republic and Cuba that are defending their medals, South Korea, who won a medal in the last Olympic Games as well. So it's pretty exciting. I think World Baseball Classic, but just with that Olympic edge, which is pretty cool.
Well, and the text you sent me the other day talked about, you mentioned, baseball being there. It obviously huge in Japan. Hideki Matsui has been part of this.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So baseball has really been the highlight of what the Olympic opening ceremony was. Eddie Alvarez was the flag bearer, which, you know, is the biggest honor you can have, along with Sue Bird, for our Olympians. The fact that it was a baseball player kind of showcasing the fact that it's back, him being Cuban American, his entire story. But then there was this moment where we had three baseball representatives from here in Japan to help with the torch carrying ceremony before it was handed off to Naomi Osaka, which we all saw. But it was Hideki Matsui. It was also two of the coaches, that longtime coaches here in Japan. They're legends. I mean, you can't get more legendary than really the sport here. And that moment, I mean, I was literally bawling watching three baseball legends here in the country, Japan. You kind of felt the country. I was actually watching it with a lot of Japanese people, and everyone was going nuts. They love baseball here, Buster, so much. And it's just cool to see it return to the games, especially here in this country.
I'm going to give you a warning. When you come back to the United States, you're not going to recognize the Chicago Cubs. I'm just going to let you know that, okay? It's going to be a completely different group of players.
What's happening? I'll need all the updates for sure. I am definitely in a bubble out here in Japan, but I love it.
All right, Jess. Well, have fun. Thank you.
Thank you.
Brandon Woodruff, all-star pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers, having a tremendous season. And part of the recipe for him this year, the Brewers giving him extra rest in his first year after the 60-game COVID season. All but one of his starts have been made with more than 4 days rest. Here's Brandon Woodruff talking about how that all came about.
When you look around the league and you see all the injuries, I mean, do you feel like, you know what, we feel like we're doing this the right way?
You don't know if it's ever a wrong or a right way.
Because there's not enough information to know.
I just don't think you're right. I don't think there's enough information to know. And I think it's just a combination of kind of communicating day in and day out how you feel.
Yeah.
I think that's been super important. And, coming into this year, when you like, hey, if stuff doesn't feel right, we're able to build, because we got the six guys, we're able to build extra time in. So, I know this time around, and I'm big on not, once I get a routine, I like to stick to it, whether if I feel good some days and some days I don't. I think extra time for me is, sometimes it just takes those couple days to kind of get off that rhythm. But I think we're thinking in the long run. Hopefully we can finish the year strong and then play into October, and I think that's our goal. And so you got to make sure that we're fresh for that September kind of push in October. So we've been good so far. It's working out. Hopefully it continues to work. But as far as around the league, I don't know. It's just, I guess every team's different. I think you're right. I think it's kind of, there's not enough information to kind of give you a blueprint of kind of how to do this.
Everything's unprecedented.
Last
year was unprecedented. This year, the year after, not that many innings.
This whole buck keeps getting. But you think about it, Freddie threw 20-something. I don't even know if he threw 30 innings last year.
Yeah.
And he's at basically 100.
Yeah, right.
He is at 100. So, I mean, that's just crazy. You know what I mean? So, it's like, you know, just kind of got to communicate and see how you feel and just go from there. I think that's kind of the way we're treating it. So,
if you, I mean, given the fact that you have, all but two of your starts are on 5 days rest, that seems to be allow you to get into a pretty good routine now.
Yeah, it has. And I just moved to a day three bullpen this year. So usually I would, pitch day off, day two bullpen. And I made that adjustment last year during the 60-game season, and that's been one thing I think that has helped me out tremendously. And there's just been a few things that, you get that extra day, you feel a little bit fresher when you're on the mound, so it feels more game-like, and then you can keep the bullpen shorter, day off, and then if you have some feelings that you felt on the mound that day three, it kind of carries over into that start. So.
Yeah.
Made that adjustment. I think that's helped out, and I think that's just part of, gaining experience, gaining innings, gaining, just a lot more knowledge about your body and everything. So as far as that goes, I'm still a baby in terms of, that whole part of it. But you look around the league and some of the older guys, and I think a lot of the guys do a day three bullpen instead of day two. So I think that's honestly helped out too.
Over the weekend, I got a chance to catch up with Lance Lynn, the all-star pitcher for the Chicago White Sox. I talked to him about his contract extension and how that came together so quickly and the competitive influence of his older brother. Give a listen.
There's been a little talk over the last month or so, knowing that the break would be a good time to even get down to it and see if there's something there. And to be honest with you, after the all-star game ended by Thursday night of the break, it was a done deal. So it took less than 48 hours, really, from the time the first numbers were sent over to what we agreed on.
Kidding.
So, yeah.
And you were right in the middle of that, sounds like. I mean, I think I read or heard something where you were talking about it, that the first contact was with you?
Yeah, I mean, it was something that we, even since I came over to start the season, it was one of those things where, Rick made it clear that he didn't trade for me to be a one and done. And, we were obviously going to see how the season played out and went along, because, heck, in spring training, we didn't know when fans were going to get in the stands and all that. So it was one of those things where everybody had to see what was going to go on, see what the baseball landscape would look like, and go from there. So it was smooth all the way around. Everybody was open and honest with each other. And then it was like, hey, we live in Southern Illinois. So it was a no-doubter.
How much of it was you love being here with these guys, and then also the uncertainty of what's coming this winter?
I think it's a little bit of everything, but in this game I've learned that, you know, you always, like, I've been a free agent twice now, and you think that he's like, oh, it's always, let's see what's out there, grass is always greener, but when you find a place you like and you, the money fits, then there's no reason to deal with anything else. It makes it easy. So I think it was a little bit of everything, knowing that this is a good fit, a chance to win for the next couple of years with the core that they have here, with the young guys that you're obviously seeing come up with injuries, that, you know, they're showing what they're about. So when you look at it that way, when you look at where I'm at in my career, I want to win. So it all worked out to be, and worked out to be the same spot, really.
Where do you think attack came from you, for you? Because I'm guessing that was something that was built into you when you were very young.
Yeah.
Because you're known as not screwing around.
So I was raised by my dad and my older brother. My older brother's 12 years older than me. So my dad always told me that, you know, if... don't bite off more than you can chew with my older brother. So it was one of those things where I just learned and had to learn how to compete at a young age, because I was growing up with older people, or like even like when we were in the neighborhood playing basketball, I was always the youngest kid.
You were pulled along with your older brother.
I was always with my older brother. So I'd always,
would he always keep on his team, or would he throw you to the wolves?
I'd always be on his team, but he wasn't afraid to let me get beat up. And when the games, you know, when we were playing games and all that, he didn't protect me. He let me go through get my lumps.
He'd also throw you the ball.
He wasn't afraid to, when we were playing football or basketball or anything, you know. It didn't let me get anything easy, that's for sure. So it made me learn to compete at a hard level.
What was his name?
Keith.
Keith?
Yep. And, it was almost saying now he's smaller than me, so he's my smaller, older brother.
How big is he?
About 6'1", 6'2", but he's definitely not the bigger frame. He's more of a skinny, fast guy.
So tell me about the moment when you beat him in something for the first time, because I know you remembered. I'm a younger sibling, too.
No, the only thing that I remember is when I was growing up one time, it was just him and I, and still makes him mad to this day. I used to have like those old lightsaber swords with the big, thick handles, so he pissed me off one time. I came running down the hallway and chucked it at him, broke his nose. I had an escape out the back door, bike was already ready to go, and I was down the street, and then my dad had to come find me when he got home from work, because I was hiding out in the neighborhood. So that was the first time where I was like, all right, you gotta do this because you're older than me, I'm going to show you. But it was not a good idea. I was probably, heck, he was in high school, so you're looking at like 7-8 years old.
Wow.
Yeah.
It was plastic lightsaber thing?
The big giant one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was one of those things where it was like we had a day, you know, and I was like, it's the only thing I had to get him with. And I made sure that I had an escape plan ready to go.
You had the bike all planned out?
Everything was at the back door, jumped out the side of the trailer, and was off to the races, and he couldn't catch me.
On Sunday, Boog Sciambi of ESPN Radio got a chance to catch up with his friend and Milwaukee Brewers manager, Craig Counsell.
Here with the manager of the Brewers, Craig Counsell, and tonight, Sunday Night Baseball, the Brewers playing host to the Chicago White Sox. Let's start with this. You guys are in first place. Give me an overview. What makes your team so good? What are the things that you've done well to put you in a position to be in first place?
I mean, a couple of things. I mean, I'd start it with just, I think we pitch really well. We have swing and miss guys. And then second, I'd say I think we've been a very good defensive team. When we catch the ball for our pitchers, I feel like we're hard to score against. So it takes pressure off our offense. It doesn't require them to do much as much. And those are the two things I think we've done exceptionally well. I think we've been a pretty good base running team as well. Our offense has been it's much better since the addition of Willy Adames.
What has he added besides the production?
Well, he's 25 years old, but he's got just tremendous leadership qualities. And I think leaders have the ability to, in this game, to me, is like they think about other people as much as they think about themselves. This game can be a game where you get very inward as a player. And Willie's always, no matter what's going on with him, he's always got his head on other players and other people. And you know, we are, as people, we respond to that, and our players have responded to it.
The other night, the Bucks secured a world championship. I know your team was at the game. I know you watched with your family at home. You're a kid that grew up in this town. You watched the Brewers. You went to World Series games in 1982. Tell me honestly, watching that, for as much fun as it was there any part of you sitting there thinking, man, what would it be like if and when the Brewers win the World Series?
Yeah, of course. I mean, when it happens that close to home and you know some of the people involved, you're wanting to do it next. You're wanting to join the fun, and you kind of see what the city has, how the city has reacted to the Bucks, and how everybody's jumped on and gotten excited about it. And the downtown Milwaukee's kind of revitalized for the last month because the Deer District because of the Bucks. So there's definitely a part of us that wants to add to that and be part of it and try to do something in October that, you know, has the same effect on the city.
Last thing, scale of 1 to 10 today, checking on your hair. How you feeling about your hair?
It's a 3 right now. It's a little humid out today, Boog.
Fair enough. Good to see you.
Thanks.
Bleacher Tweets.
Alrighty, Buster. Bleacher Tweets for a Monday. First up, we have our pal PK Steinberg. PK writes in, which GM, Cashman or Dombrowski, has the harder decision to make?
Interesting question. I got to say, too, Dombrowski's comments over the weekend where he basically said, yep, we're going to be buyers. That took some of his peers by surprise that he would be that open about it. I suspect that part of the reason why he did that was to appease ownership, because the Phillies ownership knows how long it's been since they've been in the postseason. They want to make a push, and they're a lot closer to the Yankees. And that's why I think Dombrowski's decision is a lot easier than Cashman. Cashman's decision. Look, at this point, if the Yankees add, it's going to feel like a Hail Mary to some point because they're so far back. And, you know, maybe they're capable of actually coming back and making the postseason, but there's a chance that any assets that you spend to upgrade the 2021 Yankees team would be like pouring paint down a hole. You know, that's how much they're struggling right now.
I like that, paint on a hole. Let's go to Chuck Norrisaurus Rex. This person writes in, after beating the A's 3 times this weekend, how many games do the Mariners need to take from the Astros this week to become buyers? Just one, or will they need at least 2 wins? Will they be buyers if they get swept?
No, I think they're buyers now. Look, and you know, their opportunities are going to be about adding players who they control, not only for this year to augment their chances this year, but also for 2022, which is why it wasn't a surprise last night to see a report that they're connected with the Royals' Whit Merrifield, who would help them this year and next year. The one thing I don't think the Mariners will do is to be to add rentals during the course of the season.
We got Eric E. at Esoteric Eric Zero. Eric writes in, with DeGrom likely out for an extended period of time, who do you consider the favorite for the NL Cy Young?
Boy, if DeGrom is out for an extended period, because he, of course, at this moment is a huge favorite to win, I think at that point it's wide open. You know, the Brewers guys, Corbin Burns, who we saw on Saturday, Brandon Woodruff last night, those guys would be right in the mix. But I think that would be an award that would be won with performance in August and September.
Alrighty, last one for today. Danny Joseph at Danny J. Joe writes, and how big of a mistake would it be for the Nats to not trade Max Scherzer with all the injuries and lack of consistency? It seems unlikely they could make a real push to the playoffs.
Yeah, this weekend, sir. You must have been like waving a Orioles flag around this weekend, Taylor.
Oh, yeah. When you retain, or I may not retain, but when you win the Masson Cup, Orioles 4-3 on the season here, definitely celebration worthy. And me and Mr. Malibu had a little wager going on with some work activities.
I didn't know about this.
Yeah, we made it after the fact, after the show. So whoever the loser, so that'll be Mr. Malibu, has to put together Jalen Jacoby's podcast and get that out into the world today. So shout out to the Orioles for making my afternoon a little bit later.
Man, you know, and in terms of the Nationals, I just don't know, as I mentioned when I was talking with Tim, how much trade value does Max Scherzer have when he's dealing with a triceps injury? You know, an older pitcher, let's say you made a trade and you brought him in and then immediately he was kind of dinged up. I think everybody respects Max and knows that he would try to make it work. And we saw that amazing performance that he had in 2019 when he was scratched from a start and came back and pitched great in the last game. But I don't think there's necessarily a team out there that's going to spend big on him. If you could save a little bit of money, I think that would be a plus.
Alrighty, that does it for Bleacher Tweets. Hashtag Bleacher Tweets on Twitter. And please follow, rate, and review this podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Boy, we got a lot of people to thank today. Jessica Mendoza and Brandon Woodruff and Lance Lynn and Craig Council and Boog Shambi and Tim and Taylor. Have a great day, everybody. Thanks for listening. Stay safe. And remember, hate and inequality based on skin color is something we need to fight against every single day.
Thanks for listening to the Baseball Tonight podcast. If you're playing fantasy baseball, check out the Fantasy Focus podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. The Baseball Tonight podcast.